I had beer explode all over me.
Oh, that sucks ass.
Yeah, yeah. There was a new beer tank and I was like attaching it to the cables. And then I opened the tap and then everything exploded in my face for some reason. And it was everywhere.
I still cannot see you as a horeca man.
Why not?
I don't know. You're too much favorite day for that.
That is in the wild. That is in the wild. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the first ever Data in the Wild, the Verhip sidequel, where I'll be diving into the film world's frontiers with an expert. And this week's wilderness will be the best and the worst films of the year. And I couldn't imagine a better expert than my guest this week. Hey, yo, fuck up, broer. Hola. Hey, Johnny, hoe is ie?
Hi, hi, Sloot. Hi. I'm not really an expert.
Yes, yes. Well, you're last week I introduced you as a hot summer and Hallmark movie expert.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah. I know. I have watched so many Hallmark movies this year. Actually, it's kind of sad. And there, so
that's what we can expect also from today. See, you have you're involved with the bad movie community.
Oh, yeah. I've watched so many and it's terrible because, I mean, you see like the first minute of the movie and you know how it's gonna end. Yep. And there's always a big event like a winter wonderland and it's so nice and it's nice to see everything happening.
Okay.
As you thought it would happen.
Okay.
I like predictability.
Yeah.
I'm a boring girl.
Ayo. Ayo. Hey, Jung, but Fakka, Gon, how are you and who are you?
Yeah, that's a great question, Data. Because I used to host Verhip a very long time ago, but
only half a year.
Oh, yeah, that's not that long ago. I feel like a new woman. I'm but a girl, but I still feel like a woman. So I thought of some questions, quick questions, small questions, because I am small. And it's a bit random. Maybe it's also not that random. I'm not sure. But you have to answer them, and you'll get a beer or something.
Okay.
Even if you get them wrong. Okay.
Excited.
First question.
Yes.
What is my current breakfast obsession?
Havermout oatmeal?
Yes. With.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
This was a random guess.
It is, actually.
Oatmeal with French quark.
No.
Like the French yogurt.
No, with cinnamon, hot water, some chocolate, and some blueberries.
See, the oatmeal was really a guess in the dark. Okay.
Good for me.
1/5 of a point.
Yeah. What's my favorite Christmas movie? Because it's
The Holiday?
No.
Love Actually.
Yes. Okay, so you know your Spotify Wrapped.
Mm-hmm.
My first four songs, unfortunately, I have to admit, were Taylor Swift songs.
Yes.
I'm not very proud of it, but I'm but a girl. What was the fifth song?
Sabrina Carpenter.
Nope.
Oh no, wait a minute, I know this. Eminem. It was Eminem, the song with the things that he raps on, and it's
shit, that's for me. Okay, yeah, great. Yes. You're doing amazing so far. What's my favorite tractor brand?
John Deere.
I love John Deere.
John Deere.
What is
we don't say John Deere here in the Netherlands, we say John Deere.
John Deere.
John Deere.
I love a John Deere. I love the green with the yellow. Amazing. What's my favorite Sims 4 expansion pack?
Marital Crisis?
No. No, it's Snowy Escape. But you were very close. Snowy
Escape. Sounds like a synonym. I have a point.
And no. And and because this is a movie podcast, what is my favorite movie of... just my favorite movie.
In general.
Yeah.
La Grande Bellezza.
Très bien.
Paolo Sorrentino.
Well, you get a beer afterwards.
Yay!
That's me. Now you know everything about
me. Yes. And now the kijkertjes thuis, they also, the viewers at home. Amazing. They know everything about
you. And give me your opinion on your favorite Sims 4 expansion pack, because I'm always curious.
Yeah. Send it in to Verhip and Phil podcast, and we'll pass it on to Gonnie.
Thank you. Yeah.
So amazing. Now that we got that out of the year, out of the way, shall we discuss the year? This year?
Oh, yeah.
In film and...
so what the did summer you was terrible. It was cold and it was rainy.
It wasn't that cold. It was raining.
I
was
it.
Here the whole summer.
I was here was most broke. Of the summer and it sucked ass.
Yeah, okay, a bit. So I also have an introductory quiz. I've got three questions based on last year's podcast of the same setup. So what is the top three of the highest grossing films of this year?
So,
this is actually a very interesting one.
Barbie has to be in there.
I want them ranked.
Okay, well, first things first. Yes. Barbie has to be in there.
Yes.
That I know for sure.
Yes.
Boo, and then I'm lost. There were no big Marvel movies this year, so that... I'm Guardians of the Galaxy? It wasn't that. Well. Then there has to be another one.
So... yeah, your phone will solve it for you.
Yeah, well, no, I'm trying to look if it's in my... No, it's not.
Godie, please come with a movie.
Okay, I'm gonna guess three, The Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay.
I'm totally lost for two. Oppenheimer, it's not true, but whatever. And one Barbie?
Okay, almost right. Four was Guardians of the Galaxy.
Damn it.
Three was Oppenheimer, although Oppenheimer is still in cinema, so it can grow. Two, the Super Mario Bros. Movie.
Ach, yeah.
And then one Barbie, which makes it the first female-directed movie to pass the billion-dollar mark, but also to become the highest-grossing movie in the world of the year.
I love it.
Yeah, that's good.
Girl power.
And also, just fun fact, at seven we have Full River Red. Who doesn't know about it? And at eight, we have The Wandering Earth 2. Because the first one was also... Go China. Highest paid actor. Who is that?
Of this year?
Yes.
So, again, great question.
Yes. Think about last year's one.
I don't remember last year's one.
It's the same every year. It's Tom Cruise.
Oh, I should have known
that. He had Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning. Oh, yeah. But the highest paid actress is way more interesting for a variety of reasons, which we'll come to. But one of the reasons is that, especially the pay gap between highest paid actor and actress, is still quite substantial, like about a fivefold at least.
Well, the easy guess would be Margot Robbie.
And that's completely wrong, yeah, I can tell you. I've seen a lot of sources and I thought exactly the same, but she's like at nine in a lot of things. Yeah, I don't know why. But she has more critical acclaim than she has financial income. And I'm not making this up.
Well,
you're never going to guess it.
Well, then.
And you are going to guess it. There are two answers. I have two answers.
Scarlett Johansson usually...
Yes.
Yeah,
for movies that are still coming out next year. But yeah, she already has like 50 million. But technically, the actress with the most income, Sandra Bullock.
For what movie?
Well, not for movies. So that's why I'm excluding it. So you got Scarlett Johansson. You got it right. But Sandra Bullock, apparently for a lot of advertisements. Yeah. She always looked like the person who would sell her to me. But hey, yeah, that was my quiz. That was my, yeah.
I'm Sandra very Bullock, confused. She had
15 million more in income probably than Scarlett Johansson. She had 56 and Sandra Bullock 70. Sandra Bullock, who does, yeah.
Exactly. I do really like Sandra Bullock.
I also don't have a
really
problem
matter.
With, yeah, no, that's right. So what are we going to do?
Yeah, we have a PDC. That's...
de campagne.
Oui. We both picked out our best movies of the year.
Yes.
You have better opinions than I.
I do?
I don't know, you can explain them better.
Sorry, I thought I had the boxing bell on there.
No. You can explain them better than I do, because mine are just like, I got a great vibe. So
yeah, but love, who doesn't love Guy Pearce?
So we're going to do our best movies of the year and then our worst movies of the year.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to the last thing. So
yeah, me too.
You go first. What you was... go? No, you go.
You go. Okay, oh, I'll go. I got one that I you might have on there as well. It's Banshees of Inisherin.
No.
Martin McDonagh, Colin Farrell, and Brendan Gleeson are acting together again since In Bruges, all reunited, situated on an Irish island in the 20s, and it's essentially a breakup story between two friends, one of which says to the other, I just don't like you no more.
Oh, you
you're
can.
Dull. You're really dull. And that's how it ends. And it's a dark, dark comedy filled with Martin McDonagh is known for his screenwriting. He used to be a stage writer and he then developed this filmography, which is really good so far. This is his best film so far as well. And well, it's a dark dramedy. It's very dark humor,
but it's very funny.
Yeah,
as well.
And there is a donkey called Jenny in there, and the donkey, by the way, died. The donkey actor, she died this year, but she's amazing. And the film is best summarized by one of the quotes actually regarding the donkey. That's when Brendan Gleeson's character, I think he's called Patrick or Colm. No, he's Colm. Colm goes to the priest and does a confession in the confession booth, and then he starts talking about the donkey. Because I'm not going to spoil it, but there is a dark twist in this breakup between mm-hmm. the two guys. And then he says, regarding a fatal accident with the donkey, do you think, the priest says, do you think God gives a damn about miniature donkeys, Colm? I fear that he doesn't, and I fear that's where it all has gone wrong.
Oh, that's so true.
Yeah, that's cool.
The donkey is amazing and in that movie.
Yeah, and it's
so beautiful as well.
Yeah. And it's a Billy Wilder-esque precise tonal chord dancing that Martin McDonagh does in his script. And I really appreciate it.
Sucked into it. I always like that when you really get sucked into a story. Mm. And you really do.
Yes. So what's in your number five?
My number five was... it was one... We watched it together, I believe. I think. And at first I didn't like it, but then...
Really? This is already interesting.
It was Asteroid City.
Oh, wow.
But I rewatched it 2 months ago. And now it's on my spot number five.
Really? Why is it so good?
I loved it. Well, the first time I watched it, I was really annoyed because it's just... It's a lot of... What's the guy called?
Wes Anderson.
Thank you. I'm an expert, guys.
Like,
you should
thinking about the actors. I'm like, which one of the 10,000 are in?
No, there? I'm an expert, guys. Listen to me. There's a lot of Anderson. It's like he puked, but then
yeah.
The second time I watched it, I loved it. The story, it's crazy. It's weird. It doesn't really have a clue. I can't see the clue. I don't care. I'm but a girl. Whatever. Exactly. Scarlett, she is in there. Scarlett Johansson.
Scarlett
Johansson is in there.
Sorry, I have to confess. I call her Scarlett when I text with her.
The script is weird. The shots are so Wes Anderson. But I watched it again and I was so... At first I was sad, but then I was happy and then I was sad again. It was everything. I had a roller coaster of emotions. I didn't even drink that night and I felt them all. That's really weird. Usually I need a glass of rosé for that. I also call it corny juice. Yeah.
Okay. I with Asteroid City, I got it on my honorable mentions for the worst. Not that that's close to the worst for me, or I think it's sorry. When we say in Dutch "whore," that we don't mean hooker. We it's a little extra word that we put in there. Sorry, and I'm starting to use Dutch
words
in my English.
Why didn't you like it?
It isn't as bad as The French Dispatch, which I think is a terrible film, which was too Wes Anderson for its own good. But what I had with Asteroid City was that I viewed it with you and kind of enjoyed myself,
mm-hmm.
listened to the soundtrack afterwards, thought about the film again, and I had to conclude, it's quite okay, but it has no right of existence.
What do you mean?
What's the point?
Not
it's the only point is Wes Anderson, and I fear that it's not enough for me. Wes Anderson in The Grand Budapest Hotel actually delved into some themes that were deeper than this. He wanted to, but he is too vague for his own good. So I don't see the point of giving him money to make this film, apart from the fact that it says Wes Anderson on the tin. It does Wes Anderson when you open the tin, and everything looks kind of nice and sounds okay. So, hey, if that's your vibe, but I don't
that was exactly what
deep,
I felt the first time when I watched
depth.
It. Yeah. But then the second time, I really enjoyed it. So maybe you just need a rewatch. Because I felt like the people in the movie actually had emotions. And the first time I was like, I'm looking at a canvas with eyes. So.
Okay. I just wanted to use one of the new jingles. Let's go on to four. I've got a split three tier in my top five. Mm-hmm. So this is one of the numbers three, because I couldn't really pick. It's Utama by Alejandro Loaiza Grisi. Wow. I'm fucking up this name big time, but that's because it's a Bolivian director and a Bolivian film that nobody has seen. And this film really needs some more recognition. It is acted by pretty much three actors and a whole bunch of non-actors. Well, a whole bunch, a little village community. It's with Luisa Quispe, José Calera, and Santos. I can't even read my own handwriting in Spanish. And it's in both...
Your Spanish is so good, by the way.
And it's in both Quechua and Spanish, primarily in Quechua, which is an Aztec language.
Ah.
As spoken by Aztec, yes. And it follows this elderly couple who have a farm with llamas. Not lavas, llamas.
Llamas.
Yes.
All,
and it's in the Bolivian heights. And at the beginning, one of the father says, or the father, mother, no, like... The man says to the woman, like, it hasn't rained in a while. Like, it hasn't rained in so long. And it keeps coming back, but you don't know what is how long. Turns out later, it's more than a year that it hasn't rained. And they're really, they are 70 plus. They have to walk for miles on end to get some water. He has to walk with his llamas for miles on end to get some water. They both do their work. And it's, and then the grandson comes and he brings some groceries and he gives them word of their estranged son, who is a great unspoken person, really, in the film. He isn't there, but he is talked about briefly. But there's clearly a lot of tension. There is this new generation guy coming. And I could explain you all the things, but the main thing is this is a film about a man who hides an illness, who is seeing out the last of his days without telling his wife and his closest beloved. And it's a film that does this and also really delves into the theme of climate change in a way that doesn't shove it down your throat. Mm-hmm. And you really, it is a get-in-get-out slow cinema film in a way that it's 1.5 hours of almost pure silence with these incredible shots of the Bolivian highlands. It is pure poetry in the way that I really cannot describe it too detailed, or like it doesn't make a point, but it was one of the most profound cinema experiences that I had, especially because it's Bolivian and I had no clue what I was getting into.
And
more people should see it. So Utama, if you ever get the chance. Yes.
I'm such a basic girl. My number four was actually Guardians of the Galaxy.
It is a good film.
It's not the fourth best movie of the year, but I mean, it's my list. It's my opinion. I don't care. I had to cry because of a Marvel movie, and that's fucking ridiculous.
That doesn't make
any sense. But he was so sad.
Yeah, it's very dark.
It's very dark.
It is totally all over the place, but it kind of works.
So you get, in the movie, they show more of the background of the raccoon guy.
Rocket,
who was voiced by Bradley Cooper.
Yeah. Which wow, that was a name that you did remember.
Yeah, he's dating Gigi Hadid, so I know my face.
Ah, okay.
but...
What's that guy called again? That guy that dates Gigi Hadid.
But they show more of his background or of his background story, and it's really sad and it's really dark. And there's a lot, and everything that makes the Guardians of the Galaxy movies great is again there. There's slow motions, the music is like not. It's fun. It's nice. It's whatever. And just for
it's whatever
for a Marvel movie, they did a great job.
It's a great wrapper around the series.
Yes, it really is.
At 4 of the box office results, so it's the only Marvel movie that came out this year that people actually really crave to see.
Yeah,
they wanted to see those heroes at least get a nice end, which is
and they did it. And yeah. I really enjoyed it. I already watched it 2 times, I think, this year. Also because I'm a girl who likes...
In my opinion, though, it is too scary, in a way, for a 12 certificate movie.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Because it is about... One of the fundamental themes of the movie is animal cruelty. And it's really, really not nice.
Oh, and the other... The friends of... Oh, well...
It's dark. It has some Roald Dahl-esque darkness to it.
Oh, I get what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, it's...
But, I mean, it was really sad.
Yeah.
But it was also really nice.
Yeah.
And in the end, yay. Yeah. And so, yeah, I know it's not the 4th best movie of the year, but you know, I liked it and it's my list, so.
Yes. Yes. I need more wine.
Okay, so also what I usually did in the Old for Hip podcast was that I would give you guys a Kardashian break. Now, we did not write it into the script today, but there are a lot of updates, so I'll give you some of the last couple of months, so you're still updated on the Kardashians, because otherwise...
Tell us all about it.
What are you going to do with your life? Okay, there's one. Great. We're now getting in the top 3. Amazing. Yeah. I think that we might have the same movie, but I'm not so sure.
For 3?
Maybe. You tell yours.
Oppenheimer.
Ugh, no.
See, that's what I thought. Like, maybe we have the same. This is the first Christopher Nolan movie I liked.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I talked about this already in one of the... No, the first podcast I had with Carolina. But yeah, no, it's awesome. This big cast and everybody does their job. They really... I have the feeling that for the first time, they also act outside of a Christopher Nolan script in a way. Because Christopher Nolan's weakness is dialogue, I think, usually. And female characters, and usually the combination of the two will always lead you to where the weaknesses in his movies are. Mm-hmm. Which are, and I mean, there are some silly moments in here to get all the bad shit out of the way. Like the first love scene between Florence Pugh and Cillian Murphy. Then she grabs a book and she's like, can you translate this Sanskrit for me? And he says, now I've become Death, the Destroyer of Worlds. Before he actually... And it's a bit like... It's like a Superman moment, you know? The Superman moment?
Yeah.
In the first Superman film, then...
I know.
At some point, Superman saves Lois Lane for the first time. And she's like, what a Superman. Huh? Superman? Come on. It's a bit like that. But there are silly stuff when he meets Emily Blunt. That's also a silly conversation. And somehow, it's all neglectable. I watched it the second time, and the first shot that you get to see of this movie is the procedural space where he gets interrogated by the commission. But out of focus to the left of him is already a imposing Emily Bluntness in the corner there. So Cillian Murphy is awesome in this film. This is one of the first IMAX films which really tries to focus on how you can film the grandeur of just the face. And it does really well. If you look up pictures, you're like, why is this in IMAX? Is it only for the bomb? No, it's for all the faces. And Cillian Murphy, wow. It's an acting performance and then some. But I think this movie does even more than that. I think this movie deserves my favorite film award of all time, which is the Robert Altman Award for ensemble cast. I think every single actor in this film is
even just the guy from Drake and Josh.
Who is that?
Josh Peck. He was in the movie.
Who's Josh Peck?
Josh. He pushed the button.
Yeah, no, and I mean, he's always been obsessed, Christopher Nolan, by physics and incorporating physics into his scripts, and a lot of the times it doesn't really work. You're sitting there like, yeah, okay, I get the point with Interstellar, he over-explains, and there is some degree to that, but for some reason, this was the first time that I sat down and I thought to myself, this has so much poetry written all over the page, and it's the poetry of quantum physics expressed through the mechanics of a procedural. That's what this movie is in 3 hours. It is a lot of people talking in rooms, and I wasn't bored in the slightest.
Oh, I was.
and it's also, I had bombs exploding in my head. There's so much what-if-ness in the way that this entire story in real life has played out. Like, what if the German physicians came out and told that they weren't actually planning on making a bomb? What if this, what if that? And what if we set the world on fire, which is one of the probabilities that they actually have to account for in some point. I thought this movie as well on the first year since the 1980s that we had more active nuclear arsenal in the world than we had than a decrease. That was for the first time an increase since the 80s. And this movie just comes out, grabs almost $1 billion for a movie which is basically men sitting in rooms and talking. And also, just the best role in the film for me is Benny Safdie, who plays that Hungarian guy who actually is more interested in bigger bombs than the A-bomb. He wants to build the H-bomb. But that guy, he walks in, and I know him from previous acting jobs and from, what is it, Uncut Gems and stuff like
Uncut
that.
Uncut Gems?
He's one of the directors of Uncut Gems. But he walked in, and I thought to myself, for some reason, like, he's an Hungarian. And he was. He played an Hungarian. He just exuded Hungarianness. And that's why it's number three.
I didn't like it. Maybe it was also because I watched it, I think, right? Or not right after, but a couple days after Barbie. So maybe that...
Well, the Barbenheimer phenomenon is still...
But it's...
you should end on Barbie, huh?
It wasn't a very... I mean, it wasn't a bad movie. I'll say that. It was, I think, Nolan's movie also... I think maybe my favorite, but it was just, I didn't really care for it.
Okay.
I felt the same way about Oppenheimer as I felt about Napoleon. Nice movie, nice shots, great stuff. The chick is great because Vanessa Kirby is amazing in Napoleon. Emily Blunt, love her.
Really good.
But the guy, yeah, he's a guy. He does stuff. Big stuff. He also plays it well, but...
But it's that beautiful quote at the beginning when Ken Branagh says to Cillian Murphy, to Oppenheimer, says like, well, you're busy here with lab experiments. What are you doing? I mean, can you hear the music? Well, if you can hear the music, then you don't have to read the notes. Go to German. For some reason, I also identify with that statement. Like, It's a beautiful phrase. If you can hear the music, then don't be worried too much about the notes. Go and make the music. Well,
good for
you. And then he has this passion to build a bomb. And yeah, I could go on for a long time. Oppenheimer is a movie. It's a movie.
My
one
number
of the best
three
of the year. Yes.
Well, I wrote down the Killers of the Pleh, but I know that is not
Flower
correct.
Moon.
The Flower Moon. It's a long ass title. Did we watch that one together?
Yeah.
Yes, we did. It was so great.
I have this on two.
Ah.
So we can
see,
this.
I thought that you would also have it on there. I mean, it was just, again, with a Scorsese movie where you sit down and you are just in the world that he tries to tell you. It was amazing. Robert De Niro, of course, amazing.
Yeah.
Leonardo DiCaprio, again, of course, amazing. You have to explain the plot after this because...
Yeah, I will.
And she, I don't know her name.
Lily Gladstone.
She was just...
On fire.
She was the best thing of that entire movie, I think.
I think her and Leonardo DiCaprio.
Okay, fair.
I saw some behind-the-scenes footage of the two.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible chemistry. Lily Gladstone is she like the way she actually, there's this scene in a carriage at the beginning of the movie, and then he's flirting with her, and then she says something in Osage in the native tongue, And he says, I don't know about that, but it must be an Osage for a handsome devil. And the way she smiles in that clip, the way she laughs, that's them behind the scenes. They have that chemistry going on, and it's you believe it in every way.
But she is just, she's so great in like silent acting.
Yeah,
she doesn't do a lot, but you still feel everything that she's supposed to feel. She is incredible at that movie.
Yeah. And he likes this Martin Scorsese in his last movies to have signed. I mean, the best thing about The Irishman was, I think, Anna Paquin, who really didn't say a word. But yeah, no, this is about the Osage Nation killings in the 20s. A weird time for America. Movies have just started to get made and have gotten this massive attention. The first movie was screened in the White House, and it was Birth of a Nation, celebrating one part of history and the other part, which is a fictional retelling of what could have also been after the Civil War. And then the heroes of the movie are the Ku Klux Klan. This movie poster is also featured in the background. This is the first movie screened in the White House. So this is in the background.
We love America.
And it's it's a Western, the first Western that he ever did. And Westerns, especially John Ford's Westerns, who is the arch daddy of Westerns in a way, he used to make Westerns that kind of told history to you. And it's never really history. And John Ford, when throughout his filmography, actually started to recognize that, like, okay, maybe I have been unfair to that group of people, Native men. And so, but yeah. This is Martin Scorsese, who loves John Ford. He absolutely loves him, like I do. But really telling you something that happened 100 years ago, which actually helped found the FBI, and just this horrific story, because it is what Peter Bradshaw, critic of The Guardian, said. It's an existential horror about the birth of the American century, and that's kind of apt. But it doesn't cover it all. I mean, the emotional impact, the emotional implications, all the weird intertwinedness between Leonardo DiCaprio and Lily Gladstone and Robert De Niro. I mean, this is another movie by Martin Scorsese, which is about duty and about which duty you have to fulfill. And Leonardo DiCaprio's character and his acting, it's awesome, because he has to play this dumb guy who might be smart enough to know that he's doing wrong, and at the same time you kind of doubt it.
But that's because that's what he that's when Scorsese is at his best, when he does this well. Because in The Wolf of Wall Street, we both don't like that movie, because Leonardo,
I kind of like it still, yeah, but I always have a big side note, like, but you do have to recognize that problem and that problem in the film exists, and then you can like it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because
this is perfect.
You feel like there is more potential to it, sort of, if he would have tapped into that a little bit more. And now, in this movie, he does it perfectly.
Yeah.
Because you're guessing at the end. You're still not entirely sure. At least, I'm not sure. But I like that.
And yeah, I am sure. I mean, he also got evicted, this character.
And everything looks amazing again. Yeah. It's beautifully shot. It's it's
the last score by Robbie Robertson from the band. He was in a band called The Band, backing band of Bob Dylan. There you go. But it's a gangster western. It's also very recognizable Scorsese in a lot of ways, and very unrecognizable in other ways, because it's a merger of Goodfellas with a western in a way.
Not
as flashy as Goodfellas.
I watched Age of Innocence a couple of weeks ago. And there were a lot of... I felt the same thing again with Age of Innocence as I did with this one.
Yeah.
So, you know.
As in this... Yeah. Oh, good point. But they're both some of his most profoundly meant works.
Yeah. And it's more... like you said, not as flashy. It's more in the small things.
Yeah.
Which I really enjoy.
And The Irishman has that as well. The Irishman has... I also love The Irishman. I think Martin Scorsese is doing a lot of great work. Yeah. And there's this profound melancholy to it.
So that was my number three.
Yeah. And now on to your number two.
My number two was Priscilla from Sofia Coppola.
Is that already out?
I watched it. I watched it not
I haven't seen this.
On a completely legal way.
Ah, so it's not out in the Netherlands yet.
I'm not sure if you can see it in cinemas, but I watched it, that's for sure. I'm not going to tell the ways I did right now. But I think And again, maybe this is me not being completely objective as with Oppenheimer, but I watched Elvis a couple weeks before I watched Priscilla. And Priscilla tells the story, I mean, there's not really much to spoil, but it tells the story more, the love story between her and Elvis from her perspective. And it's directed by Sofia Coppola, who I think is brilliant for this movie because she's very good at delicate, is this a right word? Delicate directing, delicate movies, delicate female characters. And it's just beautiful. I loved it so much. She, I don't know the name of the actress, to be honest. I think she is also directed, nominated for an Oscar for this. Jacob Elordi, who plays Elvis.
You do know his name?
Oh, yeah, because he's very hot. And he's also in Euphoria. That's why I know him.
She's called Kaylee Spaney.
And what I also think is very funny, this is doesn't really have to do anything with the movie, but Austin Butler, for his Elvis role, got in a complete identity crisis to play Elvis. He was completely lost for a year. And Jacob Elordi was like, yeah, I only knew Elvis Presley from Lilo and Stitch, but I needed a job, so I did it. And everyone says, oh, he's just as good as Austin Butler. He's amazing. Oh, and I think the same thing.
I should see this. This sounds very interesting.
But the thing is, they also don't
because I loved Austin Butler and Elvis. Elvis, I mean, you can say whatever you want, but I found it a very enjoyable film and I don't see a lot of problems with it.
But
it's a bit too long. But.
I think it shows the story from her side very well. It shows a little bit more problems with Elvis, which I love when we see.
You also have that lacking in Elvis. Some of his more, yeah.
I love females in movies. and they don't have any Elvis Presley on the soundtrack.
Oh.
No, it's great. Okay. I didn't care. But I also don't really care about Elvis music. So maybe maybe you should watch it. Tell me what you think. But I really enjoyed it. I think it was beautiful. It was very well done. It was great acting, great movie, great story. I loved it. Yeah, it's my number two. I was also very excited to see this movie.
Nice.
So
yeah, no, I it's on my agenda, but I mean, it wasn't out to my best knowledge here.
So
it says here on my IMDb that it's released on January 4, 2024. So it might end up in my list for next year.
I'm gonna tell you how I did it, but yeah. I did it.
Okay. Yeah, it's honorable mention time before we go into one. Huh? And because I have to acknowledge a few things.
I haven't seen
Napoleon yet. One movie that I hear great stories about, which for some reason plays in the entirety of the Netherlands, except for Groningen, is the new Godzilla movie. Yes, exactly.
Mm.
Nobody was expecting it to be good, but I heard it's a Japanese Godzilla movie. It's called Godzilla Minus One, and I'm hyped for a Godzilla movie, which I have never been in my life.
Have you seen? There's this new movie with Mark Ruffalo, Emma Stone. It's the and Willem Dafoe. It's with from the same director of The Favourite.
Yeah, no, it's also next year.
Yeah, I thought so.
High on my radar, but next year in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's it called? Little Things or something.
Yeah, like I'm also very excited to see that one.
But honorable mentions for me. I think one of my honorable mentions is your number one, actually.
I think so, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm but a girl.
Hey, fair enough. We'll discuss it in a minute. Past Lives, which was beautiful. Art house, if you really want a good romantic art house movie. About memory and everything. It's good. Tar, which we saw together.
Oh, I love that one.
Yeah. But for some reason, it's also not on your list. And Asteroid City is, which is weird. And Banshees missed on yours. Banshees did.
Yeah, I actually a little bit forgot about that one.
Should have been on,
too. Yeah, it should have been.
Yeah. And it's still a Michael J. Fox story, which is a documentary about Michael J. Fox. And it is awesome and really, really, really heartwarming. Because he has Parkinson's. So yeah, he never could sit still. He was too hyperactive. And then he got Parkinson's and he literally couldn't sit still because his arms and everything was moving and everything was hurting and you name it. But actually he learned to be still due to Parkinson's in a way. And it sounds cheesier than this film is because Michael J. Fox is a very complicated figure. But extremely enjoyable fare, and gets, well, I'm getting goosebumps talking about it. And Mission Impossible: Dead Reckoning 1, I wanted to say, because it is one of the best action movies out there.
Yeah. I totally also forgot about Tar, to be honest. But it was a great movie. It was
Yeah.
And we watched it together. We loved it. Ah, well, you can't always throw sixes. Am I right?
Yeah.
First, your number one.
No, let's do yours.
Okay, first, because we already first Barbie. I fucking loved fucking
this is
Barbie.
A fucking catastrophe.
It was the most fun I've had in so long with a movie. I was just...
It is really fun.
Oh my God. I had so much fun.
I think it would
so
be on
great.
Six for me, probably. I'm not making this up.
I even cried the first time I watched it. It was amazing. Margot Robbie, amazing in this movie.
Ryan Gosling.
But better yet, Ryan Gosling.
Damn.
Just can. I loved it. I
want to push you around and I will. Did you know also that it's the highest grossing comedy of all time?
No, I did not know that, but I love it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the plot, I'm not even going to dive too much.
Knows
everybody
knows it as well. Or you shoot it. At least, right?
What I also heard, Margot Margot Robbie said this, I think in the Actors on Actors, she talked with Cillian Murphy. And she said that Greta Gerwig, I'm not ruining that. Thank you for the thumbs up. I'm very bad with names, everyone. So, but she usually, when she writes movies, like the screenplay, she doesn't know the end when she starts writing. So it's like a kid writing a story. So she starts and then she just hopes in the end she has to figure it all out. And then I watched it after I heard that. I watched it again and you can really see it in the plot because...
Yeah.
Some things just are totally...
Yeah, it's not a three-act structured thing.
No.
Even though it is a billion-dollar grossing.
Yeah, that's the fun thing about it. And it's just, I mean, it's not a feminist movie, but it is a feminist movie.
Oh, it is.
It is, but in a nice way.
I don't like people complaining about that. I mean, this is, in the end, the first movie directed by a woman that grossed more than $1 billion.
It's...
So all good to the it. Plus, the best thing about Barbie for me is it's got men right. More than it's got women right. Just how idiotic and stupid men are. Because I was sitting there in the cinema and I thought to myself like, yeah, I have felt like Ken. I have been this man. I have been Ken. Not that long ago either. On so many occasions. And I will be a Ken again. And I am cut out for it. That's the best thing for me, at least. But
I loved
mad.
It so much.
The worst thing about it, actually, I didn't have any problems with it, but all the women around me, I saw it with like 10 people, I'm not kidding. But they were all complaining about that speech near the end with America is the actress name.
Oh, no, I love that.
Yeah, I thought to myself, you know, how many movies are there out there that can have a speech that does this? And then costs $1 billion. Keep reminding us of the money that this made because that's the true fact.
No, I really liked the speech. Also because, I really liked it. I don't see a problem with it. I mean, exactly what you said. It's not that often that you get a chance.
Just for a while.
Yeah.
Let it all out.
For Christ's sakes.
Don't complain and nitpick about every single little thing or that it goes on a little bit too long. We have pretty much never had anything like this in cinema before.
I loved it so much.
And that's a shame, but good that it is out there now.
Yeah, it's...
And it's dressed in pink.
Oh, everything is pink. It's all wonderful. You're happy. It's amazing.
I've got a Barbenheimer t-shirt as well, right?
Oh, you're so cute. No, I loved it. This was my favorite movie of the year.
Fair enough.
Yeah. And once again, I'm but a girl and I loved it.
Do you know my favorite?
Well, no. I thought it would be Scorsese, to be quite honest.
No.
No, that would be too basic, bitch.
No, also not. It's close, but I think the movie that I have at number one is Charlotte Wells' After Sun, which we discussed with you as well. It's one of the first movies that I saw this year. And It's with Paul Mescal, who should have won the Oscar because it is truly one of the best acting performances ever. And Frankie Corio, who plays his daughter. He's 30, she's 11. They go on a holiday to Turkey, and that's about it. And they bring along a video camera. It's the 2000s, I think, like early 2000s. So it's like a very cheapo home movie digital camera thingy. And you get shots of that, and you get to experience actually a person of our age, maybe a bit older. No, she was as old as her father at that time. So she was 30, and you see her reminisce back to this holiday, which has had so many implications to her life in a way, even though it's uneventful for a great amount of time. If I say too much, I will start crying, because this movie had one of the weirdest effects on me that I've ever experienced with a film, mm-hmm. in the sense that I remember when we recorded the podcast, I thought it was really good and already one of the best films of the year. But I, for instance, I don't cry a lot at movies, but I remember a few weeks later going abroad and listening to the score, and for some reason something clicked in me. But and this movie works with the uses film language to express memory in such a absolutely genius but mainly beautiful way. I listened to the score, and then I wept uncontrollably for half an hour, which I don't think I have done in 10 years.
You should do it more often. It's amazing.
Yeah, no, it was cleansing, and I haven't done it since, but the score by Oliver Coates is this haunting synchronized swells and everything, and it's ridiculous. But what this is somebody who almost reinvents film language. That's how it at least seems to you in a way, if you think about it as a film scholar, which I am sort of with my studies.
I'm not.
But it doesn't really matter. The main thing that you get from it is that it is one of the best movies of this century so far. And there will be a lot more, but this is like, of all the number ones that I've had over the last year, mm-hmm. I usually make it top five. This is one that, like, since Twin Peaks, since 2017, I haven't seen a movie come out that was this good.
Good for you.
Yeah. And, well, just a weird recap of my top five. Last year, I do grade my films, but we mm-hmm. don't on the podcast. Last year, I had 4 8s and 1 10.
Mm-hmm.
This year, I had 3 9s and 2 10s. So I do think that this year was a better year for film than last year, which was a COVID year and had some, and now we got a lot in a way. But this year, and After Sun at number one, I mean, it came out in a lot of areas last year, so mm-hmm. you might be surprised why it's on the 2023 list. Well, here it came out in 2023. So that's why, but it is, go and see it. It is something that I hope you will never forget. And that's kind of the point.
Yeah. I think also this year, Oppenheimer and Barbie, so Barbieheimer in the summer, it was so nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Because everyone was going to the
cinema.
Everyone. It was so much fun because usually...
And dressed up.
Yeah.
I wore pink as well.
I also wore pink. I loved it. It was amazing. And that was so much fun this summer. It was a good year.
Cool. Hey, we've got a full podcast. I think we should do the worst in the second one. How do you feel about that?
Oh, sweetie, amazing.
That sounds cool, right?
Oh, so also then for the Kardashian break, that's going to be in the second part. So stay tuned.
Okay.
Boys and bitches.
Hey, see you later.
Bye.
Zo, even een wijntje er weer bij. Het is alweer
een lekker dravensap.
Hij is lekker. Zo lekker maken ze hier.